You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 25 August. We've got Palo Alto Networks results after market close this evening. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alex Tayson with Thumbo Wealth. We start with some Grindrod results. Good results, and then they got the news that Transnet has given them third-party access to their rail network, and then the Powell pivot. Mongezi Mpahla, partner at Cox Yeats, director and officers insurance. What is it? Why is it important? What does it and not cover? And then we're going to be chatting with Just Share, top 40 companies that have disclosed wage gaps. Remgro, best; ShopRite, worst. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: are SA banks about to enter the crypto market? They're not ready to lend against crypto just yet, but they are watching. And Business Day, the MTN Zakhele Futhi raises $391 million with the final sale of MTN shares. Empowerment vehicle to be wound up and delisted. This one's been a disaster. It was 40 Rand. It's now trading at 4 Rand. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.5%, NASDAQ up also 1.5%. The East is mostly green, Sydney an exception, off 0.5%. Tokyo is up 0.7%, Hong Kong 2.1% higher, and Tencent 1.6% up. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, 3,411. Brent, 67.79. Platinum, 1,361. Palladium, 1,142. The Rand is 17.45. Bitcoin, 113,300. Top 40 opening call, green open, 430 points, or 0.45%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Rice from Thumbo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. We had results from Grindrod on Friday. Results are coming thick and fast. The Grindrod numbers, a good set. This is 6 months ending June. We've got HEPS up 23%. Revenue was actually a little lower. There's some moving parts here, but your thoughts on the numbers, and particularly the announcement that we had from the minister that they've been awarded third-party access to Transnet rail network. That'll probably only happen in the next 18 months or 2 years. But Grindrod, looking good at this point?
Yes, good morning, Simon. Yes, certainly very good. I think it's all about the prospects. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Grindrod has gone through a multi-year journey of fixing on corporations, cleaning up the balance sheet, and so forth. For now, they're really investing what they need to do. So, for example, they bought the remaining 35 stake in Matola, bought from Putu, actually achieved one of its best months in July ever. I think 1.5 million tons, if I record correctly. Also had a very good performance in Matola. Signed agreements with Transnet Ports in Richards Bay. And, of course, they've got those 13 locomotives from Sierra Leone,
yeah,
which will be crucial for the participation in the rail form. Now, we don't know where they're exactly going to be yet, but they did disclose that they trained the locomotives are aligned with the corridor that I applied for. So that means that they probably will be able to use. And getting to your question on the rail reform, I mean, that's obviously a major positive for South Africa. We've been calling for structural reforms.
Yeah.
And this is the one that we're looking for. This obviously breaks transit monopoly on the network.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see major investment happening. And this is, quite frankly, South Africa's first rail master plan. Right, so I think that's important to understand. But we have to be cognizant that the rail infrastructure has been badly compromised. We are going to need substantial investment to rehabilitate. We still need to do, I guess, proper studies on all routes to make sure what type of investments are required. So a lot of work is still required. So as you say, it'll take time, major investment and so forth, but this is a major leap forward. So I think that's certainly for me a big positive.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a big first step. It's going to take some time, but it is certainly. It's happening, it's quite wild. I mean, when you think about it, we're finally there. A long way to go. Jackson Hole over the weekend. Jerome Powell, his final address to Jackson Hole as Fed chair. I suppose my question is: did he pivot? Did he? Because of course, the Fed mandate is a joint mandate. It's price stability. It's full employment. He seemed to suggest that maybe they were going to focus more on the employment, less concerned on inflation, even as it may sort of edge higher. And importantly, there's still two more data points before the next FOMC. Your thoughts on what Powell said on Friday? The market absolutely loved it. They are saying we've got a rate cut coming in September.
Yeah, so that's certainly what the market is saying. So they're expecting that rate cut now in September. I think the probabilities are excess of 90% at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's still likely it'll have one in December as well. And I see even Goldman Sachs are saying October, but you know, let's just perhaps wait for the first one in September. but is it these John Powell is saying that growing risks to the job market? He also has got risks about higher inflation. So even though the labor market, in his view, is in balance, it's because there's a slowdown in both supply and demand of workers. So that's what's causing him some concern. And as a result, he's seeing downside risk to employment rising. And at the same time, also still seeing upward pressure on prices on tariffs. So as always with them, it's you know, you give some sort of cautiously optimistic type of view, or just be cautious in general. I think that's what we're seeing here. But it does feel like there's been perhaps a small pivot and we're going to see interest rates coming down. And I think that's what the market's looking for, start direction on interest rates. Mm-hmm. It's now just a question about the magnitude.
In a sense, they are, and betting's the wrong word to use here, but Lex uses anyway. They're kind of betting that inflation might edge a little higher, but inflation is not a massive risk. And almost, I want to use that word from 2021, going to be transitory, and they can therefore focus on the employment side instead.
That is correct. So one of the main reasons why inflation has been sticky in the United States is because of the rent people have to pay accommodation. And that tends to be a bit more laggy. I think about half the interest rate was half the inflation was pretty much attributed to that. So if you do start seeing slowdown in the property market, which we have seen, and perhaps you know the increases in housing coming down, you know that could support lower interest rates, lower inflation. Mm-hmm. Your pardon. So that's something to look out for. At the same time, we don't really know how the tariffs are going to have an impact as well. So it's difficult to say, but also, to be honest, I don't really think the Fed would mind interest rates of inflation in the region of 2.5-3% because of the debt situation in the country. So,
yeah,
they will never admit it, but I think in a way they have to inflate the debt away.
No, 100%. Higher inflation, as you say, it inflates that debt away. It's one of the ways where you can sort of make your debt go. Quick last question, Aspen update on Friday. I have to say, I had two thoughts on it. One, it looked like they were kitchen sinking it. They were making it, you know, just everything that could be written down got written down. And I was a little surprised by the market surprise to that update. Aspen at around 100, is there value here or rather let the dust settle?
It's difficult to say, Simon. I'll have to investigate a little bit more further. Mm-hmm. But it's clear the management, you know, at the moment is disappointing the market perhaps a little bit too often. And they will need to get back to basics and produce two or three good set of results, actually achieve the targets they tell the market. I think, yeah, it's just perhaps one disappointment too far. The balance sheet, of course, is not in great nick. I mean, that's something to be cognizant of. You know, they've still got a big intangibles on the balance sheet. You know, if you start seeing big impairments coming through, you're asking questions what could happen there as well. So you could see why the bears are sharpening their knives, but usually when sentiment are this negative, it's perhaps a very good opportunity to look at the long side of a trade.
Yeah, but I like your point there. There certainly is a case for the bears, but maybe when it's all this bad, it is a kitchen sinking. Maybe can't get worse. We'll leave it there. Alex Dace and Thumba Wolf. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter is around Jerome Powell and his Jackson Hole pivot. Is this a risky move for the Fed? Or perhaps it's, and I like Alex's point there, maybe they want a little bit of inflation. It does help with that debt scenario. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Mongezi Mpahla, a partner at Cox Eads. Mongezi, appreciate the time. A lot of my listeners, we think around directors, listed companies, unlisted companies. Some of them will probably be directors. An important part in a recent note you put out, directors and officers insurance. Talk us through what's the plan, what is this covering, and who it might potentially be for.
So thanks very much, Simon. So the D&O insurance is basically a specialized policy that is designed to protect directors and execs from personal financial loss when they are sued, basically for decisions they've made in their official capacity. So they typically cover, you know, financial exposure from, you know, if they get sued, defense costs, court settlements, damages arising out of, you know, claims from financial mismanagement, negligence, errors, etc., in their execution of their decisions and functions.
I'm imagining this doesn't cover if the situation is criminal or fraud or the like.
Yeah, so they don't cover fraud, crime, you know, intentional, you know, errors, gross negligence, etc. It's purely acts that are done in good faith and in the best interest of the company.
Yeah, I suppose the point is you can't insure if you're going to be a criminal in a sense. Is it sort of one policy fits all? Do we see, I don't know, industry-specific policies? Maybe some sectors are considered higher risk and have different policies, or is it sort of one fits all?
No, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Remember, there's various insurers out there with different offerings. So it really depends on the industry, on the insurer, and the risk at which, you know, the industry, you know, operates of that particular company. So there's no one size fits all.
Who typically pays for it? Or is this going to be dependent? I mean, does the company pay? Does the director? Or is this very much dependent on negotiation, I suppose, between the company and the director?
So it's generally paid by the company. So the company will take it up on behalf of its board to protect it. And in a way, it makes it's lucrative for people to agree to serve on boards because it means their exposure to risk is mitigated, you know, in that, because directors are now being held to the highest standard in terms of corporate governance, accountability, and acting, you know, with reasonable skill, you know, and due diligence and care. So especially where it's, you know, high stakes are involved, you are dealing with a listed company where you have public shareholders, etc. So it's basically a product that the company will take to protect its board.
And this doesn't absolve, and in fact, I think you referred to sort of personal risks and, you know, understanding the legal requirements under the Companies Act, doing proper, you know, disclosures, avoiding conflicts. Those are beyond the ambit, but something to which a director still needs to pay a fairly significant amount of attention, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously doesn't, it's not a shield to or an excuse to do whatever, or directors have carte blanche to act recklessly. As you know, the Companies Act has very strict fiduciary duties such that directors must avoid any situation that places them in a conflict of interest. D&O policies will not cover, you know, personal financial gains that are obtained improperly where, you know, a director benefits from self-dealing inside the trading or misappropriation of company funds. We saw this with the Steinhoff debacle, for example. Yeah, so a situation like that wouldn't be covered. Probably a more appropriate cover would be commercial crimes policy, which is different. It's designed for things like fraud and all those things.
Took me around the commercial crime, because this I haven't heard of before. Again, this is for protecting individuals, also protecting the company.
So it's for protecting the company and third parties generally. That's how those policies work, where there's been fraud that has taken place internally to the detriment of a third party, whether it's shareholders, whether it's creditors, clients, suppliers, etc. So that policy is really designed to protect third parties, the company itself, where there is loss due to fraudulent conduct by directors.
Ah, gotcha, gotcha. So in a sense, the other side. We'll leave it there. It's Mongezi Mpahla, partner, Cox Eads. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with StanLib Asset Management. Invest in the StanLib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
We can't get hold of our third guest from Just Share. We wanted to talk. They've released a report. We've spoken around this a couple of times where companies are part of the Companies Act requiring to give more disclosure around pay. 15 of the top 40 stocks have disclosed their minimum wages. Top of the list is Remgro and Investec. And that kind of makes sense, right? Banking, Remgro, they don't have much frontline staff. I got to say, third on the list was Impala Platinum. That did surprise me, and particularly if you think of the platinum strikes of, ooh, what are we going back now, 12, 13 years ago. Of those declared, bottom of the list, ShopRite. Minimum wage for them is just under 6,000 Rand. That is above the national minimum wage, but it is, the Living Wage SA Network has put a benchmark of 12 to 15,000 for a manageable living wage, and they're below that. SPAR also doing fairly poorly, although they are saying that they are rolling out to lift their current minimum from 12,500 to 15,000. But we will get back to the story in the weeks and months ahead.
Smart minds, big moves, one summit. Join the country's leading thinkers, doers, and decision makers at the MoneyWeb Money Summit. It's happening on the 9th of September at the Sandton Convention Center. It's one full day of powerful insights, real opportunities, and bold conversations shaping South Africa's economic future. And the best part? Your ticket is free. Just use the code MoneyWebGuest when you register. Visit moneysummit.co.za now. MoneyWeb Money Summit, where smart money moves.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
That's it for today. I was chatting with Keith McLachlan from Element Investment Managers on Friday. We were talking Spur results, and they were strong results. We also touched on how, I don't know, about 15 years ago, Famous Brands was the out-and-out leader here, and Spur was sort of going nowhere. And over the last, I don't know, I suppose since about 2016 or so, it's been Spur as Famous Brands went their misadventure offshore. But they also had other challenges, which was because they had that giant central kitchen, which really works in their favor when things are good. But of course, when things sort of start getting a bit tougher, as we've seen over the last 5 years for consumers, that giant central kitchen is also a huge cost center, which is not generating the revenue. We asked if you held the stock. Just over half of you said not for you. A quarter said, yep, you're holding it and loving it. The rest said you are going to have a look at it. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a 5-star review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. It's all about results, Itatal and Advitech.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.